Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
To convince a child to keep walking, try switching roles with them. Let the child play the role of the parent. They'll immediately do what you want them to do.
You are raising in your home people that the Bible is very clear about their status. They need to be converted, not just a conformity of their behavior. They need a transforming encounter with the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the ultimate priority.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is it our intention to get up your nose? No. Is it possible it's going to happen? It might. This is Wretched Radio, an issue that might be near and dear to your heart. This is not an intention of attacking you for your present beliefs. It is our desire to simply study an issue from what I believe is a credible source so that you and I can make wise decisions about a subject that confronts every single parent, and that is the issue of vaccinations. There are many people in the evangelical community who do not vaccinate their children. The anti-vaxxers. I hope that's not a pejorative term. That seems to be the common parlance. I don't use it that way. It's simply what I think is the moniker to describe people who reject giving vaccinations to their children. Now, just so you know, we, I hope, are going to lay out some things for you to consider. I'm not telling you how to parent. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just sharing with you from a source that I believe is, well, he's a lot smarter than I am. I know that. And while I realize that isn't saying much, this guy is a lot smarter. Furthermore, this guy stepped on my toes also. He didn't just step on your toes, potentially. But he hits me upside the head on this regarding flu vaccines. I personally don't like them. This article, it's pretty lengthy, persuaded me to reconsider my attitude about it because he used science to slap me upside the head. So if your toes get stepped on, then please join me in that same sensation. But at least this is something for you to consider. Written by one Dr. Jonathan Sarfati. Who is Jonathan Sarfati? He's from Creation Ministries International. And Jonathan Sarfati, by the way, he's going to be a part of our new TV series called Road Trip to Truth with John Fabares. Jonathan is going to be with us filming 2 weeks, I believe. Looking forward to that a lot. This guy is smart. Refuting Compromise was his first book that I read. It almost made my head crack open like a melon. And by the way, we are in melon season. So get to Costco and get yourself 75 melons, 75 for just $4.99 at Costco right now. And they are delicious. This man is also a world-class chess player, but he doesn't play one world chess champion at a time. He plays 10 at the same time. He's brilliant, and he took the time to research vaccinations from a Christian perspective. Christian Ministries International takes a generally pro-vaccination position as the best trade-off in this fallen world because the benefits overall greatly outweigh the harms. And he's going to try to make the case that if you have been putting off vaccinations for you or your kids, you might want to rethink it. They're very effective, the vaccines, no doubt. Far lower rates of a lot of diseases that used to be scourges, smallpox, gone, iron lung warts because of polio victims, largely disappeared, rabies, tetanus, completely preventable, measles, mumps, rubella, whooping cough, no longer rites of passage for most children. They're gone. They are huge blessings. Does Jonathan Sarfati say that nobody's ever been made sick from a vaccination? No, he doesn't say that. But far more people have been spared maladies than have been caused illness from vaccinations. And as a parent, you got to weigh that. It is true. Vaccination, even with dead germs, is not 100% safe. But what is? But don't you drive a car? Don't you go up an elevator in a tall building? There's no perfect solution. There's nothing that is danger-free. So if you're to compare vaccination safety with a perfect standard that doesn't exist, it's kind of folly because there is no such thing. Vaccination is overall safe. Non-vaccination is manifestly unsafe. Now, he hasn't gotten to all of the issues that I know are on your mind right now. Let's let him make the case. If you think your child's immune system is strong enough to fight off vaccine-preventable diseases, then it's strong enough to fight off the tiny amounts of dead or weakened pathogens present in any of the vaccines. Yikes. Non-vaccination is very unsafe. The CDC estimated that 90% of children who died from influenza last season were not vaccinated. Further, 40% of the deaths were in previously healthy children. Chickenpox, still a nasty disease, but what has happened with chickenpox? Before the vaccine, about 11,000 people were hospitalized each year in the United States. That's almost non-existent now if everybody's getting the vaccine. Whooping cough or pertussis, not just a bad cough, can have nasty complications, including brain damage. Coughing fits so severe can cause cracked ribs, turn children blue from oxygen deprivation. It used to kill 8,000 babies per year. Measles, same sort of statistics. On and on and on, it has been demonstrated vaccinations are overall safe. Non-vaccinations, very risky for your children. For example, say that a parent chose to vaccinate for a particular illness where the chance of serious complications from the vaccine was 1 in 100,000, and the chance of serious complications from being unvaccinated was 1 in 10,000. And the child suffered complications from the vaccine because the parents looked at the odds and went, well, we're going to give the child the vaccine, and the child gets sick. Without the benefit of foresight that only God has, one can still say that at the time the decision was made, the parent's decision to vaccinate was wise. It was the wisest decision and most responsible one. Discharging your duties as a parent, even though in hindsight, the picture can look a lot different. So what are the objections? Vaccines contain deadly poisons. All right, let's take a look at it scientifically. The first rule of toxicology is the dose makes the toxin. There are chemicals in perfectly safe food and even in our bodies, as well as vaccines, that would be toxic in 1,000 times the amounts. So good things like oxygen and water can act as poisons in large amounts. The question is, what is the amount inside of vaccinations? And the answer is very, 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 it can't hurt you low. Mercury, for instance, there's mercury in a lot of things. You eat salmon, you eat fish. But the amount of mercury inside a vaccination is so low that it really cannot hurt your body. Sarfati writes, it's a red herring because so few vaccines still contain thimerosal. In the USA, only some influenza, tetanus, and meningococcal vaccines have as much as 25 milligrams of mercury. The vast majority have none. And 25 milligrams, it can't hurt you. Formaldehyde, again, just very, very safe amounts. And you get formaldehyde in other forms anyway. Aluminum, same thing. We eat about 10 times the amount of aluminum that happens to be in a vaccine. And it doesn't hurt you. Egg protein. The protein from eggs is used as the vaccine stabilizer. That's what's responsible for many of the reported allergic reactions to vaccines. But Sarfati claims it's a non-issue for those who eat eggs or egg products. Dead viruses can't cause infection. So you can't get sick from something that is given to you. And this is where I got hit upside the head. When I got the flu shot the first time, they were on. I went, oh, I'll do anything to not get the flu. Give me the shot. And almost immediately I got sick. And I thought, that's it. I'm not taking the flu shot. Listen to what Sarfati says. You didn't get sick from a flu shot. Deadly viruses can't cause infection. It takes about 2 weeks for the body's immune system to respond fully. And those who do get the live flu virus, that you actually get sick, before the immune system was fully protective. Also, too many people call a bad cold the flu, and an influenza shot won't protect against non-influenza illness. The manufacturers of the flu vaccine make the best guess. And even if they don't guess right, check this out. They guess near enough in most cases that even if a person catches the flu, it is not usually severe enough to need hospitalization. And even if it is, the death rate is reduced sharply in vaccinated patients. An unvaccinated hospitalized flu patient was 2 to 5 times more likely to die than someone who had been vaccinated. Did you know that? Even the worst case, the flu shot is good at preventing an influenza attack, very good at preventing one severe enough to need hospitalization, and excellent at preventing a fatal attack. What about causing autism? That was started by, well, a Playboy model, Jenny McCarthy, who started that claim. And it's been denounced and debunked over and over and over and over again. Babies get too many vaccines at once. It's been demonstrated there's not enough inside of those vaccinations to cause any problems. It doesn't have enough antigens inside of it to do that. So what do you do with all of this information, Mom and Dad? It's up to you. If you want to read the detailed report, I would encourage you to do so. It is at creation.com/CMI-vaccination. creation.com/CMI-vaccination from Jonathan Sarfati. You parent your kids, I'll parent mine, but let's at least parent them with the facts. This is Wretched Radio. Please, would you please consider sending as many Bibles as you can through Bible League International to the persecuted church?
Aria was raised in a strict Muslim family. A woman invited her to a Bible study. She accepted Jesus as Lord and Savior. She took her Arabic New Testament home. She hid it. Her mother was rummaging through the house, found this, gave it to her father. He called the authorities to report her as an infidel. They tortured her, did the same thing to the Christian friend. These two women have been instrumental through their suffering to lead about 50 people to Christ.
And they would love a Bible. Would you please consider sending as many as you are able to through Bible League International, $5 for a Bible to a persecuted Christian. Perhaps 6 per month? Wretched.org/Bible, wretched.org/Bible.
You guys are seriously on a roll. So far, you've given away over 400,000 copies of What Time is Purple. That is amazing. Well done. But we're not finished yet, my evangelism friend. Our mission is to distribute 1 million copies of What Time is Purple to people everywhere. What Time is Purple is perfect for your atheist or agnostic friends who may have been persuaded by evolution, or for college students you know who are leaving home, or for anyone who doubts that the Bible is true. If you'd like to give away your own copies of What Time is Purple, or you're a ministry wanting to give away a whole ton of copies, visit wretched.org/purple today. That's where you can order up to 20 copies of What Time is Purple, or order 5,000 copies. It doesn't get any easier than that. Visit wretched.org/purple, and let's get to that 1 million people mark. wretched.org/purple.
If you have been looking for a reason to sponsor your very own Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe, perhaps this story from Max, the national director in Ukraine, will inspire you to visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Arsen, just 5 years old, escaped his home and came to the camp. His grandmother would not let him. She was cursing all Christians. His grandmother sadly passes away. So he kept coming. Not only that, he brought his parents and they repented. So this family gives the house where the grandma used to live to the church. And that's where the Tomorrow Club meets.
And that story is not a one-off. Families getting saved constantly through the Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? 30 disciples, $30 per month. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 732 AD. At the Battle of Tours, Charles Martel turns back the Muslim invasion of Europe. As Islam decimated the church in North Africa and the Middle East, Europe became the new center of Christianity. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You are correct. Ah! Ah! Oh, I tried. This is Wretched Radio. Oh, like you know what? That was like a kidney stone. And right now, Ray Comfort is saying, oh, no, it wasn't, Todd. By the way, Ray Comfort is doing well. His fourth surgery to get rid of an impacted kidney stone, successful. He claims he's back to his old self, which is scary for every pagan on the planet. He's back to witnessing. I just watched a Ray Comfort video, and Ray does it with his phone. He has a microphone, and he holds the phone very steady. I don't know how he does it, but while he's witnessing to somebody, he's actually recording it. And he was just witnessing. I saw an encounter with a young man who looks like his heart was truly being changed by God. And the entire time, it was so hard to focus because right to his side was a picture, was actually Ray's dog, Sam, in Ray's bike basket, wearing sunglasses. Ray Comfort, doing well. Thank you very much for your prayers for his health. Very glad that Ray is doing well. If you want to learn anything about evangelism, encourage you to visit livingwaters.com, livingwaters.com. But Joey, I have to it. Go! There's that kidney stone pain again.
Earthstone it.
You're correct. People can get sick from vaccines. You were just talking about a fellow from your church, correct?
Yep. He has what is called transverse myelitis, which is, I don't know the details of it, but he is... in a wheelchair with very little control over his body, and it is a direct result of the flu vaccine. It's incredibly rare. It's not like it's something that is probably going to happen if you get the it's not likely, but it is one of those really
it does
rare
happen.
Dangers. Yeah.
Well, I think it's down in or up actually in Florida. Oceanside. It's a really lovely place of part of Florida, and we have some friends that were going to go down there to do some vacationing, and they're a little bit nervous because there's a flesh eating bacteria there. Now, can it kill you? Yeah. Have a lot of people died from it? I think over the years with these different type of flesh eating bacterias, nasty business. Like 4 people have died. Now. That's not a lot, unless you're one of the 4. So there is indeed, is there no risk in taking a vaccination? No, there's not no risk, but the risk of not taking it is higher. More people die even from influenza, from getting sick, than get sick from the shot. Oh, we live in a fallen world. It's not ideal, but our immune systems are weakened, and God has provided this gift of science in vaccinations to sustain human life and let us live longer and healthier, and it has demonstrated itself to be effective. It is not without risk. I understand the pressure that you feel as a mom or dad. Well, it could be my child could be one of the 4, right? But what if your child could be one of the 40,000 that actually get sick from it or debilitated because they don't get it. It seems to me, best I can tell, if you put it on the scales, and this is one of those issues where I think we have to, the scales tip toward taking advantage of the medicine that God has provided to protect your child from an illness that could take their life or cause them to be in a wheelchair for life. That caused them to be infertile. That's what measles can do. So I understand. I understand. It's vaccination dangers aren't without anecdote, but I would suggest to you they are just that, anecdote. By the way, the long-held belief that vaccines cause autism. Joey, you said that Jenny McCarthy, she didn't invent the idea that vaccines caused autism, but she's really the one who promulgated the idea, correct?
Yeah, yep. Someone else who used to have a medical degree made it up out of whole cloth, and then people said, you're lying, you've made it out of whole cloth, and they took his credentials away.
That would be a published study in The Lancet by British doctor Andrew Wakefield. Later, he was held guilty, this is Sarfati, he's from New Zealand, I believe, held guilty of ethical violations. Lancet, the journal, retracted the study in 2010. Study after study has shown no link between vaccination and autism. The U.S. National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine published a study in 2004. 2014, a big meta study was published over a million kids. Here's what it said. The cohort data revealed no relationship between vaccination and autism, nor was there a relation between autism and MMR. Findings of this analysis suggest vaccinations are not associated with the development of autism or autism spectrum disorder. Furthermore, the components of the vaccine or multiple vaccines are not associated with the development of autism or autism spectrum disorder. Even autism advocacy organizations reject a link between vaccination and autism. Now, could it be that it appears that a vaccination caused autism? Yeah, I suppose it could, but if they happened at approximately the same time. But that doesn't mean that that is a direct connection. Furthermore, it appears, unless there is some grand sort of conspiracy going on here, it seems that there isn't a connection according to all of the studies that are credible. If, of course, you believe the studies. And I find it hard. Look, I know there's big pharma. I get all of that. Believe me, I understand that. But I don't think that they stay in business from creating medicines that hurt people. They're trying to do good. Babies get too many vaccines at once. Well, not according to Jonathan Sarfati. In reality, even 1,000 vaccines at once would only use about 1% of the immune system, because a child's immune system must fight several thousand new antigens every day from the environment, from perfectly safe food, and for every cut or graze. All the vaccines together compromise 150 antigens. That is a small fraction of a percent of the antigen load a healthy child faces every day. And so, I don't think that that is a valid reason to not give your child a vaccination. Your mileage may vary, Mom and Dad. Now, what about the biggie? We've talked about this before. Vaccines contain parts of aborted babies. Unfortunately, some vaccines have been cultured on cell lines that originally came from aborted babies. One, the MRC-5, from an abortion that was performed in September 1966 and one that was performed in July 1962. No question, the original abortions were sinful. But note that cell lines, that means descendants of one cell from each of these babies. So there's no fetal cells nor fetal body parts in the vaccination that your child will receive. No new embryos are being generated for the purpose of culturing vaccinations. That would be way immoral. These vaccinations use the cell lines from a child that was aborted decades ago, not for the purpose of creating vaccines. This is important. Any cultures from the original lines are likely to be now removed by tens of thousands of generations. Now, here's something that might help you think through this. A similar comparison, organ donation. Would we refuse a life-saving organ that was from a victim of a drunk driver? Would you accept that? Because he was killed in a sinful way. Accepting this organ, you think, well, that doesn't condone drunk driving. Correct. Nor does taking a vaccine from those babies aborted years and years and years ago does not condone abortion. Another example, it would be totally immoral to murder someone to harvest his organs, even if it would save another person's life. However, if someone you loved was murdered during an armed robbery, would it be immoral to consent to organ donation so that even though a terrible sin had been committed, something good came from it? And would acceptance of such an organ mean condoning the murder? Similarly, should we refuse a life-saving treatment that is the one good thing that came from the abomination of murdering those two babies? The principle here is that the beneficiary of the organ must not have been complicit in the crime in the slightest. And that's not the case. I understand why it troubles you, but I think Sarfati makes a pretty powerful case it shouldn't have to. One last objection, perhaps, to vaccinations. I don't want the government forcing me to vaccinate my kids. Yep. I get that feeling. But he writes, there is a logical distinction between vaccines are good and vaccines should be compulsory. The first does not entail the second. In other words, it really doesn't have much to do with the argument. My displeasure with what the government might be imposing on me really is in the backseat trunk, or maybe even just being pulled along by the trailer. Instead, my first responsibility is to the health and well-being of my child. While I might not like what the government is up to, my first care and my first responsibility is with my children. Again, you can find that article at creation.com if you would like to study more about the issue of vaccinations. And even as we disagree on this issue, let's remember, this would not be a cardinal doctrine, and we can still live in unity with one another, right? This is Wretched Radio.
Books of the Bible. The Book of Proverbs is a collection of memorable sayings meant to encourage wisdom for godly living. Each proverb is to be understood on its own, and then in light of the rest of the book, and finally the whole Bible. When you desire wisdom, look to the Book of Proverbs, which reminds us that the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Indeed it is. This is Wretched Radio. Just use that quote in a new booklet that I'm writing. Todd, tell us more about it. It's called 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide and 13 Reasons Why You Should Live. The issue of suicide, it's just pandemic. It's everywhere. And people don't know what to do with these thoughts of sadness and depression and hopelessness. And here sits the Christian church with an opportunity to re-enchant the world with a holistic gospel. Want to be careful with this. The gospel of Jesus Christ is Jesus died for sinners. Period. That's the gospel. If you'll repent and put your trust in God's beloved Son, he will forgive you of your sins and cleanse you from all unrighteousness. You will inherit eternal life because of the resurrected Messiah, Jesus Christ. The end. But the gospel has a lot of benefits, doesn't it? The gospel goes about reversing the effects of the fall on us. All of creation groans. And when it says all of creation, that includes you and me. Our brains are broken because of the fall. We suffer from sin. We suffer from the curse. Our thinking is wrong, and it needs reprogramming. And that is what God will do for a saved Christian. He will begin the process of rewiring your brain. I got to work on this part of the booklet. I'll be honest with you, because it involved a computer. And all I know is how to push some buttons and then call my kids when I've got problems.
Well, first you get the stack of punch cards, and then you make sure that they're in the right order. Oh, wait.
Snap.
Wow. That's a little harsh, Joey.
I'm just surprised you got it. Okay, no, I admit that was harsh.
Do you see the line behind you, Joey? No, because it's too far. You crossed it way, way back there. Steve Jobs is to Apple what God is to you. Steve Jobs is to Apple what God is to you. Steve Jobs created the Apple computer. Now, go ahead, try to run non-Apple software on the Steve Jobs design computer. And how's that going to work out for you? Would it be Microsoft? Does Microsoft run on Apple?
No, it does not. Well, it can. There is a certain amount of cross compatibility, but it's something that has to be.
All right, Dell. Dell. What software wouldn't run on an Apple? Whatever.
Yeah, the short answer is yes. Windows doesn't run on Apple.
Okay, you're running Windows on the Apple. What's going to happen? It's not going to run right. Why? Because Steve Jobs didn't write the computer to accept that software. They're not compatible. It doesn't work. God made you. What is God's software? Well, it's found basically revealed in the Bible. So everything that is true, everything that is right, everything that is just, everything that is holy, everything that is worthy of praise, that's God's software. And what have we been doing as a rule? We have not been operating on the manufacturer's specified software. We've been importing a different program. And it's typically going to be the world system or false religion or some lie that is not from God's program. We need new software. We need a reboot and reprogramming. And that's what God does once he saves somebody. Please note, God doesn't fix our brains, then we get saved. That is not the order of affairs. He changes our believing, then he progressively goes about changing our thinking. And that is what we all suffer from. That is our problem. That is our malady. Now, what does that have to do with the Wicked Witch of the West? Well, in the booklet that I'm writing, and I'm trying to get done with it. I really am. I've been working really, really hard on it. Friel, you don't lift boulders for a living. Quit your whining. Been working on finishing this up because I'm trying to show how the person who is depressed or suicidal is running on the wrong software. And you need to start by completely getting saved. Then you've got to change your believing. Then God will reprogram you progressively so that you're operating the way that he designed you, so that you do not have sad thoughts, joyless thoughts, hopeless thoughts, anxious thoughts, troubled thoughts, angry thoughts, sinful thoughts. He'll progressively fix those things. But the starting place is recognizing I've been chasing after the wrong thing. I've been believing in the wrong promises. The world system has lied to me. I reject it, and I believe God and his word and his promises. And the comparison is with the world system, who is constantly telling you, hey, do it this way. And then, just like Charlie Brown, you get the football pulled out from underneath you. You believe it. You land on your back. And you are depressed, you are sad, you are worried, you are anxious. And then what does the world come along and say? Well, you didn't do it quite right. Maybe try it this way. In fact, do it more often. And so the very lie that landed you flat on your back is repeddled by the same world system that lied to you in the first place as the cure. The world system that sold you a lie that caused you grief and misery simply repackages and repeddles the exact same lie under the guise, oh, this'll make you feel better.
Oh, my world, my world.
And that is why the Wicked Witch of the West is quoted in 13 Reasons to Not Commit Suicide and 13 Reasons to Live, which will be available, I'm told, in September. I hope. But that is not what we were going to discuss here on Wretched Radio. Instead, would like to share with you some stories of what's going on in our world. From the New York Times. Wow, did you read the article that Phil Johnson posted by any chance? Oh, man, Scylla. It was about a Harvard professor. The guy lives in Harvard land, somewhere in Boston, I suppose, in this Victorian, just exactly what you'd expect from a Harvard professor. And Phil Johnson titled this very, 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 very long New York Times article. This is basically, this article captures everything that is wrong with our world. Did you read it? Oh, I just had to like swipe through it because I couldn't. I read the first few paragraphs and it's like, okay, I get the point. This is a mess. This guy's life is a complete botched up mess. But it went, and I'd stop and read a little, swipe and read a little bit. And basically, as I recall from the story in the New York Times, the professor was at a hardware store, some store, and a woman who claimed to be from Paris, said she's from out of town, asked if he knew where something was. He said no. She said, you sure are a good-looking man. He said, sorry, I'm married, which was a lie because he's actually living with his divorced wife with their two kids in their Victorian house as he's a professor in Boston and she's an attorney general. But that was the earlier swipe, yeah. And he decides to go out for coffee with her. And what do you know? She's a lesbian, but they're intimate together. But that was kind of a problem because the depression medication he's on makes it a challenge for him to actually partake of that gift that should only be done in the covenant of marriage. She ends up, as I recall, getting pregnant, even though it probably wasn't from him. Swipe, swipe, swipe. Somehow a transgendered person gets involved in it. Swipe, swipe, swipe. And then there's another guy involved who gets the girl pregnant again. And on, and now there's a lawsuit. He loses his job. On and on it goes. And it's like, Phil, I couldn't stand the story, but you captured it perfectly. It just personified so much of what is wrong with our world. New York Times article number 2. New York Times, all the news that's fit to print. To make it to the moon, women have to escape Earth's gender bias. Everything in space carries the legacy of Apollo. It was designed by men for men. Not deliberately for men, perhaps, but women were not allowed in the astronaut program until the late 70s, and none flew until Sally Ride became the first American woman in space in 1983. By this point, the space program was built around male bodies. Wow. So the space program won't be any good until we get rid of the gender biases and then women can participate just like men can or something. Now, forget the safety of it. See, back in the old days, men used to take risks on behalf of women. That's just gone flying right out the doors. Physical demands, well, apparently those go flying right out the doors too. So we just need to get rid of our gender bias. We just need to get rid of genders. That's what I think. I just think we need to get rid of genders.
Seems to be the goal.
Seems to be. Scientists are conducting experiments into male uterus transplants. That's right. That's just enough of that article right there.
Yeah, could you burn that?
We've gone absolutely bonkers. Please note, it's only going to get bonkier. That's right, bonkier. That's the comparative form of bonkers. Bonkier. Why? Post-Christian world, post-Christian thinking, post-Christian behavior. If it's anti-God, anti-Christ, they will embrace it. This is Wretched Radio. My special guest today is Dr. John MacArthur. Sir, what is the issue with the Masters Academy International?
The issue with TMAI is very simple. Biblical training. Training men to be the kinds of pastors that are defined and described in the New Testament.
Fascinating, sir, but there are so many ministries who encourage us to do acts of charity internationally.
I mean, it's fine to support philanthropy or some feeding of poor people or caring for children that have needs. But at the end of the day, the impact on a nation has to come from the pastors and leaders. So investing in that is making the maximum investment for the maximum impact.
Thank you, Dr. MacArthur. We're all out of time, or I'd love to ask you more questions. If you would like to support the mission of the Masters Academy International, training indigenous pastors to be biblical expositors, changing nations, you can do that at wretched.org/pastor.
Thank you for being here today. Always glad when you spend part of your day listening to us here at Wretched Radio. And thank you for supporting our millennial initiative. The whole idea is to get Wretched in front of this lost younger generation. And to do this, we're going to get Wretched on more streaming services and more social media platforms so that wretched.org won't be the only place you can find full episodes of Wretched. Would you? Could you partner with us to help us get the gospel to this younger generation through the Millennial Initiative? Go to wretched.org/donate for details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner and help us get the gospel in front of more people. wretched.org/donate. Oh, before I forget, do please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you very much. And thank you very much to our Wretched monthly gospel partners who make all of this possible. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Ultrasound machines save lives. Don't believe me? Then believe Dan Steiner of preborn.org.
That young woman come in, 18, with a boyfriend, and he's pushing her to abort, took him back into the ultrasound room. There's two hearts. It's twins. The father looks at that. this 19-year-old guy. He goes, I don't know what we're going to do, but I know what we're not going to do. We're not going to kill those two babies.
Ultrasounds work. When a mommy, a daddy sees a picture of their baby in the womb, 80% of the time they choose life. It is $28 per ultrasound. May I ask, how many ultrasounds could you provide? $28 per month. Please note, whilst preborn is busy trying to save the lives of babies, they're trying to save the souls of mommies and daddies by preaching the gospel. Please consider supporting preborn at preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called God and Savior. If Jesus were only human, his death could not have paid our debt. But Jesus is both man and God, able to represent us, yet able to bear the wrath of the Father. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
What a world! What a world. This is Wretched Radio. Talked about an email that I received last week that might be worth your consideration in light of the New York Times article suggesting we got to get rid of gender bias in the NASA program so that women can make it to the moon. I guess to make it to the moon, women have to escape Earth's gender bias. Now, why is it that that program was dominated by males for so long? Could there have been an attitude of condescension? Yes. Yes, there could have. I mean, that's sinful. But after all, this is a planet filled with sinners, so I would never say, no, 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 it had nothing to do with sexism. It may have, but it was also a different era. It was generally accepted by our culture that men would play the risk-taker role for the betterment of society, for women, children, and men also. That was just the accepted norm. That's simply changed. Now, the question, of course, for us as Christians is, how do we respond to that? Received this email from a Mrs. Johnson, and I just thought this was so fascinating and forces us to consider, what is the era that I'm living in, and how am I going to respond to a culture that is moving away from Christian norms as fast as Joey, Tony,
the speed of
give
light.
Give them the metaphor. As you can do better than the speed of light, can't you? Faster. Oh, I've got this.
And the speeding bullet more powerful than the
faster.
Locomotive?
Hold on, I think I got one. Faster than Ken Ham would run away from an old Earth sermon. What I got for you right
I'm not
there.
Sure, Ken would run away though, would he? He'd probably.
Probably jump into the fray.
Have to fix it, yeah.
That is true. Dear Mr.
Faster
Mr.
than
Mr.
Supergirl Friel. Getting home to get muffins out of the oven.
Wow. In yesteryear, it was considered the norm for men to show deference to women, such as opening the door for her, tipping his hat, offering to pay for her meals, standing for her to sit on the train, offer to carry her bags, pull out her chair, etc., etc. Okay. Now, this is sort of speculative, but nevertheless, why were those things done? What informed those social norms? And I think in our Western civilization that the Bible mostly, I'm not saying everybody was saved, but mostly informed the thinking that men are stronger. And I think we can all agree on that, right? That there is a stronger and a weaker, and that the stronger should do things that would make it easier or better for the weaker. Furthermore, standing up when a lady entered the room, it was to show deference. It was to show respect. It wasn't to be somehow derogatory in our attitude toward women. It was an honorable thing to do. A lady is in the room. That's a form of honor. Not a form of dishonor. Where did that come from? I suspect mostly from a Christian mindset. Now, the letter continues. My father-in-law, on a recent visit, opened the topic of social norms. Let's just stop for a moment. Social norms. What are those? They are cultural things that we have concocted and basically agree to, as this is the way we're kind of going to do things around here. This is the style of clothing. This is the way we're going to behave. These are the principles that we operate under. They're social norms, and they can look different in different cultures. And neither culture can be sinning because they are just that. They're norms. They're not biblical commandments. We need to remember that. Back to the father-in-law. They opened the topic of social norms and practicing politeness, saying it was unnecessary and likely inappropriate to practice older standards, citing they were from a bygone era where women were lower-class citizens and often didn't have their own means. Okay, I reject that. Nevertheless, there would have been men paying for the meal, say, on a date because, perhaps, that women were making less then. That is indeed possible. And that men were predominantly the breadwinners making more, and it was just an act of kindness, not an act of pity or charity per se. Nevertheless, that is a bygone era, isn't it? I remember once taking the time to open a door for a young lady, and she literally, she stopped, and I went, oh, please, go ahead. Ugh. She literally, she made a noise, like she was disgusted with me. Why? Because social norms are changing, and the problem is we live in a transition time. So now, Christian, what do we do in this transition time? How do we respond to this? Back to Mrs. Johnson. I grew up with these things as a standard and found that honoring my gender, being treated as special for being a lady and not just one of the boys, to be a beautiful way of expressing appreciation for my gender. Even today, I'm thrilled when a man tips his hat or nods his head in passing simply because he notices a lady. In conversation with my hubby later, the conclusion was reached. There is no biblical reason to undergird these practices unless the woman is your own wife. Well, then, is that where we're at? So, gentlemen, don't hold the door for ladies anymore. If you see a woman struggling with a package, she's on her own. Don't offer any form of politeness because it's not a biblical command. Only your wife should receive that kind of treatment. Is that where we're at?
Did you ever try that? If you're honest with yourself, it feels wrong to ignore something like that.
But that could be simply because you're trained culturally. That's just what you've practiced for decades.
Innate.
You think so?
I do.
All right. So what do we do now, Tony? The culture rejects it.
I still open doors, so I don't know what to tell you.
All right. And what if you get the same woman that I had? Ugh. Chauvinist.
Well, I'd call it a plus, but...
Everything in me, writes Mrs. Johnson, says that accepting the current culture standard of politeness, in other words, if you wouldn't do it for a man, don't do it for a woman, treat all people the same regardless of gender, is not a beautiful standard for the Christian to strive for. I agree with that. But without a biblical standard to treat all women with deference rather than just a man's own wife, I was stumped as to whether to teach our sons to give women social deference and our daughters to graciously accept the courtesy. Or would I follow the social norms, teach my daughters to pay for their half and my sons to treat women and men completely the same in every social setting? Well, the times, they are a-changing.
Okay, though.
How would I raise my kids? What do I think we do? We are in a transition time. So I think we need to accept that. This is another sign, in my opinion, of a post-Christian culture where the whole gender blurring, it's just everybody's the same. There's no deference. There's no consideration. There's no acknowledgement that there's any sort of difference of a stronger and weaker. That is just saying that. These could get you kicked off the YouTube machine these days. So I think we need to recognize that. Should we continue doing it for our spouses? Absolutely, in my opinion. What about for women at church, my fellow believers? Absolutely. What about you're in public and you're going to whatever building or campus or office? Do you do it there? I think the answer is I think you should try to demonstrate that. I don't think it's a sin to not do it, frankly. And I wouldn't even say if our culture somehow there's a hashtag don't open the door for me, you jerk movement. And okay, We won't open the doors any. Okay, if that's what you want, I don't think we need to feel like we're sinning in that. If the world is actually offended by our behavior, then I think we just stop it. But this, yet to me, again, is another opportunity to show the world something different. We've seen the changing of our culture just change so rapidly. Now, part of it is J-curve. You know, it's been going on, postmodernism. At the age of the Enlightenment, it started. It gets into postmodernism, radical feminism, the free love movement in the 60s. Well, all of a sudden, boom, it's like everything's just falling apart. Everybody's going bonkers. And I think that the social media, the internet, the speed at which we are able to receive information and disseminate it has caused the rapid change, downward change of our culture. And if that's true, is it possible, maybe, that as the culture gets so sick of it and they see us Christians acting in a way where we open the door for our wife? You stand up when she gets up from the table? You hold her chair? You carry heavy things for her? You protect her? You show deference to her? I wonder if the world will get increasingly sick of its sin and tired of its worldview bringing nothing but sadness, hopelessness, depression, and suicide, and start to look at Christianity and those weird Christians that actually do those old-fashioned things, and they start asking about the reason for the hope that lies within us. And I keep thinking about Owen Strand's new book, which is coming out soon, Reenchanting the World. Do we have a chance to start being such a peculiar people? The world getting increasingly tired of its dead-end worldview will start looking to Christianity and going, all right, that's it. I want to know. How should you raise your kids? I think show deference to the ladies. If the world hates it, well, you'll just have to cope with that. But let's use it as an opportunity for evangelism, even as the world increasingly shuns such archaic ideas and hates us for it. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.